Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about FreeNAS, a great way to get storage attached to your network. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps, episode 432, recorded May 2nd, 2017, FreeNAS Update. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD, an on-premise open-source continuous delivery server by ThoughtWorks. GoCD gives you complete control of and visibility into your deployments across multiple teams. Since GoCD is open-source, you can download it and use it for free. To discover the power of their pipelines, visit gocd.io/twit. And by Bitbucket from Atlassian. Bitbucket is the Git solution for professional teams. Start your free account today at bitbucket.org/forthecode. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it. I love when we get to do one of those. Projects you might want to download right after the show and play with it. Today is probably one of those. Joining me this week, once again, Simon Phipps. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be back, Randall. Hello.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I am, as usual, in my back cave in Southampton in the United Kingdom, where a grey sky out of the window has been greeting me all day, and I've been sitting here excitedly waiting to get back on the show again.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you're on. That's definitely true. And for those of you that are watching the video, you might notice a slightly different background for me. I am in Boston, Massachusetts today. I'm at an Airbnb. Hopefully the bandwidth holds up for this particular show. Hopefully the lighting isn't too overwhelming or underwhelming. And I'm here because there's the Red Hat Summit. They hold this every year. Last year it was in San Francisco. This year it happens to be in Boston at the Boston Convention Center, which I hadn't been to before. I'll be heading over there immediately after this show. It's midday today already. Normally I do this show in the morning, it feels like, but today it's midday. And I'm going to go look for future guests. Actually, last time I was at Red Hat Summit last year, I found five or six guests that I helped fill the schedule with. So I'm hoping to do the same as well today, which is the reason I'm here in Boston. That because they invite me as Floss Weekly. This is really cool. This is the status of the show is such that I'm now getting invited to various conferences around the country, even around the world, as my role as showrunner for Floss Weekly. So today we have on FreeNAS. It's a network task storage. Well, here, I'll just read what they say about themselves. It's an operating system that can be installed on virtually any hardware platform to share data over a network. FreeNAS is the simplest way to create a centralized and easily accessible place for your data. Use FreeNAS with ZFS to protect, store, backup all of your data. FreeNAS is used everywhere for home, small business, and the enterprise. We have coming on in a few minutes will be Chris Moore to talk about that. But let me tell you my experience from this, what I've seen about it so far, is that I'm a big FreeBSD user. My main server, Stonehenge.com, is all running FreeBSD right now. And I like it for many, many reasons. It seems to be, I ran OpenBSD for many years, and the policies of the people in charge there were a little odd sometimes, so there weren't ports brought in as quickly as I wanted them to do. But FreeBSD seems to have the broadest background of ports, the best community support, and also it has things like ZFS, even booting off ZFS right out of the box. And what FreeNAS has done is taken the standard FreeBSD release and added to it a bunch of packages and things to make it more like a network-attached storage device with lots and lots of cool features, of which I don't even know all of them, which is the reason we have a guest on so we can get our answers done like that. Simon, what do you know about this so far?
It's been a long time since I looked at it. I think it was on the show in 2012. And
yes.
I remember looking at it at that time and thinking that it was closely related to a hardware business strategy. And I'll be very interested this time to see how that hardware business strategy is going and whether it's powering development and just how diverse the community has become. But apart from that, I think that you're probably far more into it than I am, actually.
Okay, good. And actually, you were on so long ago that you were in black and white. Do you remember that episode?
I really don't know, but you'll see this week. Unusually for me, I'm here in red, which never happens. Yes. But today was the day to bring out the DebConf T-shirt, possibly because it's a BSD themed show, just to show there is another side.
Awesome. Well, the reason you were in black and white is it was the SOPA protest.
Goodness me! doesn't time fly?
We're getting old. We're both getting older. Yeah. It sucks getting older, but the alternative is much worse. Anyway, we have lots of questions to ask. I have lots of questions to ask, but we do have an important message before we can do that, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD. GoCD is the on-premise open source continuous delivery server created by ThoughtWorks. With GoCD's comprehensive pipeline modeling, you can model complex workflows across multiple teams with ease. GoCD can easily configure dependencies for fast feedback and on-demand deployment with its parallel and sequential execution. It offers complete customization for your software's individual needs. GoCD's real power is in the visibility it provides over your end-to-end workflow, so you get complete control of and visibility into all your deployments across the organization. It supports auditable deployment and can delegate the configuration of pipelines to users without full-blown admin privileges. GoCD will perform tests written in most languages or frameworks. Their test reporting will tell you in exactly which change set and on which platform a test started breaking. You can compare content across any two arbitrary builds, making it invaluable when troubleshooting a broken pipeline. GoCD has extension points for which plugins can be created. Numerous plugins are available, or you can write your own. Say goodbye to deployment panic and hello to consistent, predictable deliveries. GoCD is open source that you can download and use for free. Discover the power of their pipelines at gocd.io/twit. That's gocd.io/twit. Commercial support and enterprise add-ons, including disaster recovery, are also available. And we thank GoCD for their sponsorship of Floss Weekly. Now let's go ahead and bring Chris Moore on. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks, guys, for the invite.
Cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
So I'm actually located in Maryville, Tennessee, which most people don't know where that is. So Knoxville, Tennessee is a little bigger. Maybe you do know where that is. Mm-hmm. Very eastern tip of Tennessee here in the U.S. Eastern mm-hmm. time zone, for those who wonder. But nice little small town. And I'm sitting here at the IX's office. We have an office, of course, in San Jose, California. But then we have a satellite office now in Tennessee as well.
Okay, I'm going to wave in your general direction. I think it's right about there, south-ish
for me. Yeah, right.
Maybe a little more south
here for me.
Okay. I always love this. It's a perfectly virtual show, and I still talk about physicalities when we're doing all this, because I think it's great. It grounds what we're actually doing. Okay, now let's get on with the show. So FreeNAS, what problem is it solving? Why would I even think about getting something like this?
Well, so of course, you're looking for a NAS. And of course, if you're on this show, maybe you're interested in open source. That's a big deal, right? Especially for a lot of us. We're BSD nerds at heart. BSD really powers a lot of what we do at IX. And we've taken that awesome free BSD base, which includes things like ZFS and, of course, the legendary security of it, the ports tree, packages, jails, all those good things, and we've turned that into this product called FreeNAS, which is really a Swiss Army knife if you really get right down to it. When you first set it up, you'll be kind of blown away at all the different services it can support, everything from, of course, old school FTP up to you can now do S3 support in it. You can host your own buckets. Ooh. And, of course, NFS, Samba, iSCSI, and pretty much everything in between. So it really is kind of a one-stop shop for your NAS. But then as of lately, we've started adding some new things to it, where you can run VMs on it. And of course, you've been able to do jails for a while, which if you're not a free BSD guy, I always got to explain this. Think of Linux Docker jails as kind of the thing that came first, or maybe you're more familiar with Solaris Zones. That would be a better analogy to what FreeBSD jails offer. But definitely just a lot of neat stuff under the hood. And we've seen people do some really wild setups with FreeNAS. So don't just judge it immediately by looking at it. You might find out somebody's doing some really crazy setup on it that you didn't even think was possible. But it just kind of gives you the freedom to do that.
Now, how did this come about? And how is it so cool? And maybe nobody's ever heard of it.
So, well, a lot of people have heard about it. We've been surprised when we go to trade shows. That seems to be the first thing people ask us about, like, oh, IX, I've never heard of you, but FreeNAS, oh my gosh, that is amazing. You keep on rocking. But FreeNAS has been around for, oh gosh, going on 8-9 years, I want to say now. A small open source project started on FreeBSD by some folks over in Europe. And IX Systems acquired the rights to that and then kind of took over development of it about 6-7 years ago, I want to say. Maybe it's a little longer. I came to the party a little bit after that. But since then, they've sponsored, they did a rewrite of it many, many years ago, and they've hit FreeNAS 9, then they did 9.3 and 9.10, which are based on versions of FreeBSD 9, and then 9.10 was based on FreeBSD 10. And then now we're looking at FreeNAS 11 actually coming out here in the next few weeks, which will be based on FreeBSD 11 stable. But it got started, you know, small and humble, right? NFS, Samba, and some more basic file sharing, and then over time has just grown and expanded and started to add enterprise functionality like Active Directory support and your LDAP and Kerberos and all those type of things.
Well, this sort of makes sense then if I'm running, say, a commercial network, a small office or whatever. Mm-hmm. But does this have any value for me as just a home user?
Sure. And that's actually kind of our secret strategy, right? That's how we get into people's lives initially, is in the home. So a lot of people grab FreeNAS because, hey, it's got the word free in it. It's a NAS. It's open source. That kind of gives us all the warm fuzzies, right? So we go ahead and grab that, and then you deploy it at your house. And next thing you know, you're rocking plugins, running things like Plex Media Server or Sickbeard or Couch Potato or whatever. So you can definitely use it as kind of your home NAS media streaming entertainment center. But in addition, now you're doing your file sharing as well, you know, your NFS and your Samba. And again, for home users, because it's built on FreeBSD, we're not locked into any particular hardware. So people cobble together all kinds of crazy rigs, you know, some very humble, some that we go, oh, you probably shouldn't run it on that, to other just powerhouses. We've seen some wild builds people have done on their own, and they run kind of everything in between.
I have an existing, well, let me describe my setup and then talk to me about whether I could actually replace it all with FreeNAS or maybe one of your hardware devices that we can get into in a few minutes as well. So right now what I've got is I have a Drobo that has something like 16 terabytes of storage in it, but you can't really see the Drobo on the net. So I have I have a Mac for my daily usage, and I have an older laptop. Mac laptop that's up there, so I can do back to my Mac and pull up my screens, or I can even run iTeleport or whatever is one of the protocols that it knows how to do. I actually got three ways to pull up my screen on my Mac, and sometimes one of the other one doesn't want to work. Okay, the reason I have to do that, though, is because, okay, so my Drobo has all of its data on it, and it can be seen over the FireWire from the Mac, but in order to move it into the cloud so I can get to it when I'm on the remote, I have to then go in with a Finder window or something with an SSH command line and copy it to my like Dropbox or whatever. I actually have about 7 services to do that too. I have way too many things about being portable to really make sense. Is this something that I could replace that entire setup then with a FreeNAS device?
I think pretty effectively, actually. So FreeNAS is all web-based, so you'll have a nice web interface which gives you access. So you're not going to need to hook up another PC to be able to control it in any way. It is a complete solution. So basically, after you've gotten it installed, and, you know, got all your storage and disk set up, you'll have a web interface to go set up your shares, manage your shares. You can export over protocols such as WebDAV, for example. So if you need to get at your files remotely, you can do that. Of course, you could set up SSH if you want to just go into it. And I'm old school Unix, so SFTP works really well for me in most cases. Mm-hmm. But you know, you can do that and everything in between, right? And then share the same directories or data sets via Samba or NFS locally as well. So as long as you have a web browser, you can point at it. You can definitely manage it and do everything through that. So you could eliminate at least 2 out of that 3 of your setup, I believe.
Oh, cool, cool. Okay, well, I want to look into this. Well, here's going to be my litmus test, though. I don't want to be. I am actually smart about ZFS because I like I said, I'm booting off ZFS in my cloud machine. I really was happy when all of a sudden FreeBSD could do that. Still don't quite understand boot environments because I know I want to upgrade safely, but we could talk about that later. One of the things that's the gold standard then is how simple a Drobo is to set up and how simple a Drobo is to upgrade, you know, the devices slowly. Can FreeNAS approach that level of simplicity? I mean, could a consumer use this without having to have all the FreeBSD knowledge behind the scenes?
Sure, sure. Yeah, most of our users actually just go take a look at our forum someday or interact with our community. You'd be surprised. Most of the people running FreeNAS are not technical in the sense that they're FreeBSD users. A lot of them don't even know what FreeBSD is or realize that's what's happening under the hood. Maybe people have heard the word ZFS or see reference to it in FreeNAS, but we've done a good job of basically putting a nice user interface on top of that and newer user interfaces in production as well now, just to make that kind of drop dead simple, right? If you can go there and click a few buttons, yeah, you might want to understand a little bit about RAID Z setups for ZFS when you're creating your initial pool. So we recommend, and we give some good recommendations, but if you're a little bit more more knowledgeable than your average bear, maybe you want to read a little bit on that to figure out what kind of redundancy you want and so forth. But again, the web interface makes it simple enough that just about any home user is able to go ahead and get it deployed and then start setting up services and sharing without needing to know too much of the nuts and bolts under the hood.
Except they do need to know how to set up a system. So that my could I just recycle one of my old PCs that's sitting around and it has a bunch of disk attached to it? Could I just turn that entirely into a FreeNAS box?
Yeah. So the FreeNAS install image is just a hybrid USB ISO images for DVD. So you can basically just pop that into a system, tell it to install over whatever your boot device disks are going to be. I recommend you mirror them personally because it's nice if your boot device dies that it doesn't take the system down. You have time to replace it. We do all that with ZFS as well. But post-installation, it'll boot you up to a little prompt that tells you the IP address it discovered on the network. And at that point, you just fire your web browser off, point it at that, and you're good to go.
Okay, and so that does sound pretty simple. But let's talk just for a minute about the talk all we want. It's my show,
sorry, right?
Let's we'll talk do about what IX Systems is what IX Systems is bringing to the thing. Like let's say I'm not smart enough to set up like a standalone box, or I don't have any boxes to recycle. So this is going to be like a greenfield installation where I'm going to have, you know, I want to have the simplicity of like a Drobo, but I want to do it this way. Can you tell me what sort of things IX Systems is bringing to that?
Oh, for sure. So we have a whole variety of options. So you probably, for your home user consumer, you're looking at a FreeNAS Mini. And we offer that in a couple varieties. We have the regular Mini, which is a 4-bay unit. And then we have a Mini XL, which is a honkin' 8-bay unit, which, again, is still not huge. So you can fit it easily under your desk. It's smaller than a typical ATX case. Runs very, very quiet. Matter of fact, I've had several of them under my desk here at different points and don't even notice they're running. But you can buy those from IX Systems directly. You can get them on Amazon, and they will come preloaded with FreeNAS on it, ready to go. At that point, you just feed it some disks. So figure out what kind of capacities you need to have and buy the disks for that. Go ahead and pair them in there, and you're good to go. But beyond that, you know, IX Systems then, of course, takes that and scales it into enterprise as well. So we offer quite a different number of units there. We have all flash arrays. We have hybrids. We have our Z20 array, which is spinning disks. So kind of we can scale it from as small to as large as you need to go. If we're talking, you know, a couple terabytes versus petabytes, we can come up with a solution for that.
And is that all just U.S.-based, or are you delivering those outside the U.S.?
We are doing some stuff in Europe as well, and we have sold outside of the U.S. So get in touch with us. We just need to figure out which country you're in. But, yeah, definitely we sell a lot into Europe as well.
Mm. So one of the things that I do with the NAS that I've got in the house is I have other servers installed. And I've been looking at your Wikipedia page. I see you support a number of plugins for handy servers, like there's Nextcloud and OwnCloud, which are fairly obvious. Yep. Do you have any support for other server-based software, like Mastodon or LibreOffice Online or Asterisk? For example, I have Asterisk on one of my NASs.
So yes and no. We don't have official plugins of those that we support as IX, but what we do offer is the jail system. So in FreeNAS, you have the ability to go ahead and create a jail, and then at that point, you're running basically a FreeBSD box where you can go ahead and package add and set up, say, Asterisk, I think is what you said there, or maybe you want to do your own install of Nextcloud or some other service we haven't packaged as a plugin. We kind of provide you the tools necessary to go ahead and run that and host that on your FreeNAS. And then in addition, with 11.0, the same functionality extends to VMs. So if you have kind of a pre-built image, say you want to download Debian and throw it in and run something out of Debian, you could do that, or some other prepackaged VM solution would work as well.
Excuse me, running away there to catch my telephone.
Okay. But yeah, definitely. You know, there's a variety of solutions, and we, of course, are creating new plugins all the time. We're actually getting ready to debut a new plugin rewrite that is going into 11.1 here in roughly 4 to 6 months is what we're kind of targeting. But that's going to make the whole plugin creation process a heck of a lot easier. If you can do a little bit of JSON, you can basically author a plugin, host them yourself, put them up to GitHub, share them with other users. We're going to try and make that as painless as possible.
Right. I would be very excited to see a LibreOffice Online plugin so that I can let people, you know, that works very well with Nextcloud. It's integrated with it. And, you know, I'd love to be able to let everyone in the house be able to spring up a copy of LibreOffice on whichever browser they're on.
I'll consider the request made. I'll see if I can get one of those written up for you.
Thank you very much indeed.
There you go, right?
And So we've got a few questions from the chat room, actually. Emily the Strange has been asking us whether we can share and get files from Mac and Windows machines.
Yes.
With this. So not just using the Mac and the Windows machine to get files, which obviously you can do because you're running SMB, but the other way around, whether you can put files onto the NAS from, you know, mount remote disks.
Sure, sure. So we operate in many multi-system environments. So, of course, you can copy files to and from Mac and Windows. Of course, via SMB, you could do it via NFS. If you're hosting VMs, you could host things via iSCSI as well. So definitely a lot of options. And since we support those protocols, you can pretty much use whatever app on top of it that you're comfortable with for migrating things over. I think we have a plugin for SyncThing as well, which a lot of folks have used to keep things in sync between different platforms.
Right. User Tinkertoy Tech asks, does this system have a crash plan backup?
There is a crash plan plugin in the tree, yes. So you can definitely grab that. We haven't made a new version of it for the new stuff, but that's still in beta. So coming soon. But yeah, for the existing version right now, if you go grab it, you can grab crash plan.
I think I know the answer to this one already, but Tinkertoy Tech asks, can this be administered headless?
Of course, it can be administered headless. Yeah, most of our systems do not have any kind of setup, any kind of monitor hooked up to them. Matter of fact, we've even done a lot of the work to make it administratable via serial as well, so you may not even have a VGA in the box. So, yeah, keep that in mind. Again, most systems, that's how they're deployed.
Right, right. So the machines I've got in my server room over there, I have one monitor and a whole load of machines with no heads on them. And I normally go in using Webmin. To go and administer most of them. I'm guessing you have a system that looks a lot like Webmin built into.
The user interface for sure. And if you get something like the FreeNAS Mini from IX, those all support IPMI as well. So you end up with a full IPMI solution in case you need to actually get access to the BIOS or whatever, headless also.
Do you have any support for Docker containers on here or for any other way of putting containerized software on rather than needing to write a plugin?
Sure, sure. So, of course, we have the JLS plugin, and that's kind of the FreeBSD answer to Dockers. But if you're a big Docker fan, which we know a lot of folks are, the way we do that through the moment is through the VN subsystem. So you'd be able to load something up like, say, CoreOS or Rancher OS and then run Docker via that mechanism in a VM. And we're actually working for 11.1 to have an automated deployment for that. So you'll have a one-click, hey, I want to deploy a Docker VM template, and it'll do all the behind-the-scenes magic to get that spun up. So then you can just go in and start administrating your Docker containers.
Chat room user Superu asks, can FreeNAS be set up to support IP security cameras?
We've had a ticket open about this in the past. I don't believe at the moment there's anything natively supported for that. If your IP security camera can do any of the standard protocols I've already discussed, then yes, you could definitely set that up. But it doesn't do anything specific to any particular model of IP security camera.
Right, right. Yeah, it would be very handy to be able to find the IP security camera and stream the video automatically without going the other way of having to log into the IP camera and configure it to use SMB to store files, which I've found is really messy on my home network.
Yeah, that can be a bit cumbersome. So we've definitely had that request in the past. It's just a matter of setting the priorities and figuring out what most people want to use FreeNAS for. And it comes up from time to time, but we'll definitely keep it in the back of our minds if that's something we can sneak in down the road.
Right, right. And just a wild question from me. Do you have any support for any distributed storage in here, like Tahoe Labs, the ability to use a mesh distributed cloud storage system?
Not at the moment. Not at the moment. We've just started putting the initial stuff going into the new 11.0 release with MinIO. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, which is an S3 object store that does support distributed. So we're just starting to get into that that space and start to experiment a little bit. So I'd say stay tuned over the next year or two. You might see some of that start to show up.
Right. I'm very excited about the idea of having true distributed storage so your cloud is actually a cloud rather than just somebody else's server. And anything that can make that happen is good with me.
Well, to give you an idea, the last 2 months I've built 4 new FreeNASs for my house so I can experiment with some of the new stuff we got in the lab here related around distributed. So, again, we're very much interested in that. Just stay tuned. We'll see what we can get out in the near future.
Hey, you know, when I first booked this show, it was a different guest and about something called FreeNAS Corral. And then everything broke loose. Can you tell us what you can tell us about that and why FreeNAS Corral just got it was like Lenin. Everybody was erased and all the pictures are just completely gone from the entire website. Like, it never existed.
We don't talk about those days, right? So it was a thing. I'll give you, I guess, the short synopsis of it. So,
okay.
FreeNAS Corral had been in development internally at IX for many number of years at this point. It was originally going to be FreeNAS 10, to give you an idea. You know, FreeBSD 10 is already now looking at the end of its life, and everyone's on 11. That's new hotness. So, it's been a while. It had been under production for a while. A lot of new ideas in there, all new code, all new rewrite, everything down from reaching into the OS, middleware, UI, and so forth and so on. It had a lot of cool concepts like Docker integration, and of course the VM integration was pretty neat, a CLI, etc. But after it got released, the lead for that team ended up leaving IX to go chase some other opportunities elsewhere, and you know, we had to do just a really significant code review and look at it internally and decide, is this something we can push forward? Was it written in such a way that we can support it, we can maintain it, and continue to evolve it properly? And the decision was made, you know, it'd probably be better just to pull some of the neat bits out of Corral, like the VM support, adding some of the Docker functionality, look at a CLI. It would be a lot less effort to bring those pieces back into our existing code base, which is already pretty tried, true, vetted, and enterprise out in the enterprise right now. It's solid. A lot easier to bring those in, you know, kind of one at a time versus going with the whole rewrite approach and then trying to spend years making it stable and ready to be something we could officially support. So, again, it was a gut-wrenching decision, a lot of internal debate about this. You know, it was a big deal, right, to kind of pull back on a release after you've done it. But we just felt for our community and just, you know, for what a NAS is. A NAS is something you want to be able to set in the corner, and you want to know that it's solid. It's not going to croak on you. It's, your data is safe. That's the most important thing. And we felt that going the route we picked here was the best solution forward.
Okay, and but I also understand it left some of the people who had already upgraded and migrated sort of in a lurch, pick a word. I don't know what to say.
There. Yeah,
so thrown for a loop. There we go.
Sure. So the good news is about that. All your data is still there. So Corral uses the same ZFS that's going into FreeNAS 11, same version of it, and same version that you can use on FreeBSD even for that matter. So all your data is definitely not lost. You can always import that pool on FreeNAS 9.10.3 or 11, whatever version you end up running. The nightlies right now could import that pool and you can get going. What doesn't get migrated back is some of the specific settings. So you will have to go back through and maybe set up your NFS shares again. If you had a VM deployed, you'll just need to import that VM disk image and set back up the properties for it. It was so radically different. That's not a direct one-to-one thing, being able to migrate that way.
Sure. One of the things I like about OS 10, keep going at that, Mac OS now. Got to get the new name, Mac OS.
right.
Is that I'll never get used to that. I gotten so used to saying OS 10 all these years, I'm not going to be able to say Mac OS, but okay. I'll make the mistake at least two or three more times, probably in this show, and we'll see. But one of the things is that the GUI is actually editing the underlying files that I'm familiar with, like network stack, things like that. I have GUIs that can update like the PF firewall and things like that, but ultimately it's the files underneath that are actually driving the thing. And I'm expecting and hoping that the GUI this FreeNAS has as a front end is only just modifying normal system files, or is there also some database that it also uses that has more metadata beyond that I could only get to from the GUI then?
So kind of a hybrid. So the way it works is the UI does talk to a middleware which has a database. And that database is what we consider the source of truth in that it keeps your settings, right? But what happens is that database then, when you boot up the system, just reads the database and it writes to all those files you're talking about. So your PF config, your SSH config, you know, your ZFS setups, your NFS setups, your Samba config. So all the standard config files you're used to seeing when you go log into a FreeNAS box, SSH in, you can go look at those. those and you can poke at those. But the reason we do it this way with having a database is it makes it very easy to back up. So part of one of the cool things about FreeNAS is you have the option via the UI to say, I want to back up my entire config, which is all of your setup minus the data. And at that point, it just backs it up to a single file. You could say migrate systems, yank your data disks out, put them in a brand new system, reinstall it and say restore my config. And hey, all my users came back, all my NFS came back, all my iSCSI shares came back, everything's back exactly the way it was before. And again, it's just basically acting as a translation layer in between those files you know and love and our database, which just keeps it nice and tidy in one location, easily backupable and importable.
Well, this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Bitbucket. Let's be honest, your code is your world. You create it, tweak it, and lovingly obsess over it every day. So picking the right repository management tool is super important. Only the best for your code, right? That's why the team at Atlassian created Bitbucket. Bitbucket is the Git solution for professional teams. It helps over 5 million developers build with a purpose. Bitbucket gives teams of all sizes free private repositories with state-of-the-art features. The world's best pull request algorithm. Collaborate right in the code with inline comments, threaded conversations, and mentions. Built-in continuous delivery. Branch permissions help prevent errors by controlling the actions users can perform. Get granular permissions at the project, repository, or even branch level. Integrations with your favorite tools like Docker, AWS, and Azure. Because Bitbucket comes from Atlassian, it offers the best Jira integration available, giving your team everything you need to take your code from concept to customer. More than 900,000 teams love Bitbucket. It's used by companies like Ford, PayPal, Starbucks, and Pandora. It's the only collaborative Git solution that massively scales. Bitbucket is for the code that takes us to Mars, decode the human genome, or drives your next car. Visit bitbucket.org/for the code to start your free account. That's bitbucket.org/for the code. Try Bitbucket today. What will your code do? Simon, do you want to go ahead and take the next question?
Absolutely. So, Chris, this all sounds, you know, pretty awesome here. What sort of system do I need to run this on? Has it got to be helium cooled, or can I run it on a Raspberry Pi?
Can't quite go down to a Raspberry Pi, but it definitely doesn't need to be helium cooled. So FreeNAS supports the AMD 64 architecture, so pretty much anything 64-bit. That's for reasons related to ZFS. ZFS behaves best when it has a 64-bit address space, and it does tend to want a lot of RAM. The more RAM you can feed it, the better. Keep that in mind. You don't actually need that much RAM. We see people run it on 4 gigs just fine. You could go down to 2, although depending on what services you're running, like maybe that's not enough. But you can more often than not cobble together a system. You don't need a ton of cores for it. ZFS isn't very CPU intensive. So it just depends on the workload you're doing here. Really, what you're going to care about is the speed of your disks and being able to properly saturate your network connection if you're doing, say, iSCSI or NFS or Samba. But yeah, I've run it on a variety of systems, real humble i3s. Heck, I have an AMD X2, an old AMD 64 X2 that I run it on. And just depending on the workload, you can definitely scale it up and down as needed. I would recommend, and you know, we encourage people to get ECC memory. It's not officially required, but you know, it doesn't hurt to have it when you're doing a copy run write file system. But as apart from that, you can pretty much, you know, build your heart's content. If you look at our FreeNAS forums, which is at forums.freenas.org, there's a lot of people discussing the homebrew systems they've built and kind of what their build setups are. People sometimes post some really slick looking rigs there that make me drool and go, oh man, mine looks really shabby compared to that. So anyway, yeah, you can do just about anything in between.
Right. So the chat room user Jay Bennett has asked, does FreeNAS do self-updates? If I just leave it alone in my server room, will it keep itself up to date, or have I got to go and feed and water it every day?
So it doesn't self-update in the sense that it's going to reboot every night at midnight. It will alert you when there are updates available. A lot of our users who aren't running the nightlies, for example, maybe update once a year, once every 6 months. So it's not a very common thing. And again, it's a NAS, so we don't want to just flip it off on you in the middle of the night, because who knows? I mean, you could still be watching TV at 2 a.m. streaming a show or something. So yeah, we don't typically do that, although you could go in and script something to do that if you would like. But as general practice, we want you to prompt it to reboot, because we don't want to shut off your access to your shares without you knowing about it.
Right. And you know, it's got a lot of different packaged software on it. Does it auto-update packages, or again, do I need to keep an eye on that, and does it become a hobby?
Well, a lot of the package is built in. Everything that comes with the product is all automatically updated. So when you do an update, say from 9.10.2 to 11.0, you're getting the latest Samba and the latest packages related to MinIO, etc. The plugins will usually update as well. You may have to go click on those if they get a little too out of date. But we typically keep those up to date as well. And we like to put the user a little bit more in control. I'm not a big fan of just updating things under the hood without you knowing about it, because then all of a sudden you wake up and it's like, oh, my next cloud's acting different today, or a regression happened, or some new functionality I didn't set up, and that kind of screwed up my workflow for the week until I can get to the box and fix that. So we're a little more conservative on that front.
Right. Jay Bennett wanted to keep his run going here was very inspired by Randall's advertisement for GitLab, and wanted to know whether you can run GitLab on FreeNAS machines.
So GitLab actually just came into the FreeBSD ports and package tree, I want to say, a month ago. So we don't have an official plugin for it, but if you go ahead and build a jail on FreeNAS, just create a new jail, and then just do package install GitLab, and then sure enough, you can bring GitLab up on FreeNAS. And there's all kinds of information on the internet how to do that, but usually just a handful of commands and you're good to go.
So it actually has me curious then. So my background is FreeBSD, so I'm looking at this, and I actually still have a 9.3 installation. Nobody hack me, please. Nobody hack me. Now watch. Now I'm going to get blasted because I just said that. I'm definitely in trouble, yeah. But there's nothing dangerous on that machine anyway. It's just my mail. You can read my mail if you want. It's boring most of the time. So I'm familiar with both the idea of binary packages coming from somewhere and me building my own with Podre Air, which I found really awesome. I'm doing my own package builds for a long time now. Does FreeNAS use the same package servers? Can I run Podre Air on it if I want to have customized packages, or would you recommend not doing that? I mean, how does this interface with the FreeBSD community?
Okay, so FreeNAS, we use Podre Air as part of our build process that assembles the FreeNAS system. Of course, we're building out of ports and packages the same way you would on, say, FreeBSD. That being said, when we update FreeNAS, those packages are indeed updated and replaced. So we don't encourage users to go through the actual FreeNAS base system and start pulling on packages and upgrading packages. That's a little dangerous because you may pull the wrong thing and next thing you know, Samba tips over, right? And you don't want that. Mm-hmm. So what we recommend users do is that's what a jail for. A jail is a secure, safe environment that's away from your base system where you can then basically run FreeBSD's packages from upstream. So when you deploy, say, a FreeBSD 11.0 jail, at that point it's configured to pull packages from the official FreeBSD upstream repos. So then you could go ahead and load Podre Air, and there's instructions on how you can run that in a jail. You could, again, as I said, GitLab, you could host that way via jail as well. And then you can update with the normal package updating mechanisms, just like you would if you were hosting your own FreeBSD box, except because it's on FreeNAS, now you have the nice UI to get into it and start and stop jails and do some of the management aspects without having to SSH into it.
Oh, that sounds very promising, because then I'm not like using an entirely different setup for all that, which is nice.
Well, to give you an idea, that's what I do here. You know, so my jail set up to run my mail server, for example. I have a jail set up to run Mumble. You know, I set up different things, and I just throw them into jails, and they act like it's another FreeBSD VM, except very, very lightweight, not doesn't have those heavy requirements that a VM would.
And as you said, you're migrating to FreeBSD 11. Does that mean that you'll have lighter weight launching for Docker containers in? Because that's one of the features that's coming around using the Beehive or whatever it is. It's going to be much simpler going forward.
Yeah. Part of that is going to be we're looking at using Rancher actually on 11, which will be something we deploy via VM, which is very lightweight. And at that point, you can bring up the Rancher UI and you can do all your Docker container management lifecycle right through there. That's heavily in development at the moment, so things may change before we release. So take that all with a grain of salt. But that's the current direction we're going towards.
Okay, and we have a question from the chat room. This may have been answered a little bit earlier, but I'll ask it again because we're just here asking questions. Oppositional one. I don't know how to pronounce that. Sorry. Can I connect two or more boxes as in a cluster?
Can you connect to more boxes in a cluster? So at the moment, none of the services we have in FreeNAS will let you set up a proper cluster. With 11.0, we just threw in MinIO, which MinIO.io. Go take a look at that. That's basically an S3 object store. And that does support clustering. We haven't exposed all that to the FreeNAS UI yet, but we are definitely thinking about that. So stay tuned.
Okay. I may be channeling question 7 wants to ask, but I'll start them. Who decides what's in the next release of FreeNAS?
So at IX, we do take a large role in kind of designing the product and making sure it's solid, but it really is a community effort. It's an open source project. So people, I can't tell you how many times somebody sends a ticket in like, hey, could I add Mosh, for example? And oh, yeah, sure. That seems like a great idea. We should add that. Next thing you know, we've added Mosh. Or better yet, you know, maybe they do the pull request and all I have to do is click commit. So yeah, it's definitely very much inspired and driven by the community. Typically when the community demands or asks for things, it gets put in. And even better yet, when somebody sends a pull request or code in, that gets thrown in as well. So we definitely try and work with the community as much as possible.
So from the way you're describing it there, community, you've got a, you know, a wall between you and community. I had a look at your GitHub graphs, and it looks very much as if all the commits that are in there are by IX staff. Is that a good perception, or do you have people who don't work for you working on it as well?
No, definitely the lion's share of them are by IX employees. It's a big project, and it is a full-time job for a whole team of people. This isn't just one guy in his spare time over the weekend kind of doing it anymore. This is a team of people. You know, running a NAS is very complicated, and so we have a lot of people full-time on staff. We're really driving it forward. But that being said, we are extremely open and very encouraging of the community sending in pull requests and sending in new code, and we'll be more than happy to commit those, evaluate them, give feedback, and push it in. And we've had community contributors in the past who have commit bits as well. So, you know, if people step up to the plate and want to contribute. The part that we run, of course, is the release lifecycle, just making sure that it's QA'd properly. We have a whole QA department that goes through and tests things on FreeNAS and, of course, TrueNAS, our enterprise product, before it goes out the door. So we will definitely shepherd that process. But as far as the code goes, we're constantly accepting patches. Sometimes they come in tickets, and then we end up being the one who commits them. But definitely very welcoming and encouraging of that.
Right. And do you ask those contributors to assign copyright to you, or are you working purely on BSD license basis?
It's all purely BSD licensed, for sure. We're IX Systems goes way back. We are a big FreeBSD fans, big FreeBSD shop, and so we try and do everything, if possible, in the BSD license.
Right, right. So, because your company has changed, or the product has changed hands at one point in history, so presumably accumulating the right to pass it on is actually important to you.
Sure.
So do you do anything to make sure you've got all the rights necessary for that day when you sell out and it becomes another Oracle product?
Well, really, the rights are more to the name, right? To the actual name of FreeNAS. I think back in the day when IX acquired it, there was the community was going through a little bit of a transition. There was talk of, oh, we'll just switch this to Linux. But, you know, us being guys that bleed FreeBSD, some folks stepped in and said, no, we can't allow that to happen. So some negotiations were made, and we acquired the rights to the FreeNAS name and then kept evolving it on FreeBSD, which has really been where our hearts are at. So going forward, again, the FreeNAS name is owned by the IX Systems company, but the source code's BSD licensed. It's an open source project through and through.
Right. And so what would you say actually is FreeNAS? You know, because if looking through the list of what makes it up, it's made up of many, many open source components, not all of them even under the BSD license.
Sure.
Where is the line? You know, do you have a conceptual definition of where the boundary is? Is it just the packaging effort and pretty much all the code is somebody else's? Or do you have a neat answer to that question of what it is?
Well, it's a set of UIs, it's a set of middlewares, config databases, a ton of custom scripts, tweaks to the FreeBSD base system in some cases, which we usually push all those back up into FreeBSD so they don't stay exclusive for long. But just all the things necessary to make all these disparate services function as a whole. You know, getting Samba to play properly with this and getting NFS to play properly with that, and then marrying that all to ZFS and, you know, marrying an idea of, oh, now we need to do snapshots. And what about replication? You know, kind of tying all these disparate ends, which, sure, if you took a FreeBSD download and set up a bare metal system, yeah, you could go ahead and package and install Samba. You could set up NFS. You could set up ZFS. You could set up own cloud or next cloud, right? You could do all those things by hand and, you know, come talk to me in about 6 months when you've kind of got it all dialed in. That's perfect. With FreeNAS, though, we take all that and then we give you a nice UI to then control that on top of it. Because I've been there. I've run FreeBSD for going on more than a decade now. And you know, I've run many FreeBSD systems, and I've done all that by hand, where I SSH in, I administrate it, I manually do the package updates, I manually edit the comp files, I manually start and stop services when I need to, or hey, a service crash, let's go restart that. You know, FreeNAS just kind of takes that all and says, okay, we're going to make this all super simple, very easy. So with a few clicks, you can do very complicated setups with iSCSI, for example, or you can do a really simple Samba share. You can deploy a jail. Again, a lot of the cool stuff you could do on BSD if you had just all the time in the world to sit with it. FreeNAS just takes that, bundles it all into one really nice, neat, tidy product that's been QA'd. And we have to do a lot of the work that you would trip over in the community too. For example, this Samba version has this particular regression, so we won't pull that in until that's been fixed. Whereas if you're on the FreeBSD side, I mean, the port just gets updated and the package gets updated, and when something regresses, that's on you. You get to deal with that. And we're going to try and QA and gatekeep those type of things so that they don't go and impact you out in the community.
Right. So a question from the forum, WI guy asks, what are the largest drives that you support in FreeNAS? And then a question that Randall and I both have for you is, what is the biggest installation you've ever seen?
So drive sizes are changing all the time. I think, what are we experimenting with? Are the new 10 terabytes out, or is it 12? But I believe those are fully supported as well. FreeBSD is really good about, the underlying FreeBSD OS is really good about just kind of supporting those things. And we make sure, of course, they're supported as soon as we can get our sweaty little hands on one, right? As far as largest installations go, we've had a lot of enterprise customers do things in the petabyte ranges, of course. I can't comment too much more beyond that, but there's definitely some very large installations out there.
So a question from Tinkertoy Tech on the chat room, and he's asked this a couple of times now. Could you contrast this to Unraid?
Sure. You could say they're definitely similar in some senses, but yeah, FreeNAS is FreeNAS, and I don't tend to comment on other competition out there, but there's other similar projects out there for sure.
Right. And what would you say was your nearest competition when it comes to open source NAS, because I've seen quite a few companies doing open source NAS, and or they claim it's open source NAS. What they're really doing is selling hardware, and
their
open source is a kind of a project to push their name out there. What would you say was your main competition?
Well, the one you mentioned, Unraid, would probably be one of the first ones that comes up a lot of the times in recent history. There's also some other ones out there. Again, I don't like to mention all the names of competition, but yeah, there's definitely other ones out there, and that would probably be the closest one at the moment.
Okay, hey, we're almost out of time. I'm trying to think of a couple more questions that came along while I was looking at this. I think I've got all the questions I was going to ask out of there, but is there anything we didn't ask yet?
Yeah, boot environments. Go ahead. Boot environments? About at one point.
That'd just be, well, just given that this fundamentally is built on ZFS, and boot environments, I think, originally started with Solaris and have been ported successfully over to FreeBSD. Can you give me like a 30-second view of what for our audience, particularly what that's about, and why does it make it more reliable to do an upgrade with that?
Sure. So ZFS, of course, does snapshots and clones. So you can basically snap your file system at a point in time and then clone it and make changes to it. So boot environments just kind of takes that and extends it to your operating system level, where before an update, we snapshot the system. So it's exactly as it was at that state. Those bits don't ever change until you delete the boot environment. And then at boot time, you have the option to boot into those old snapshots, essentially, except they're fully read-write, and they can go and take on a life of their own. And just makes it very painless to upgrade. Should something screw up, or if you have a problem, or you fat finger something and end up messing up the update, like, not a big deal. You can just, again, reboot, pick the old boot environment, and keep on trucking like nothing happened. Try it again later. So that saves our hide, has saved our hide many a time in the past. I know I use it on FreeBSD, and I've used it quite successfully to make sure I can always roll back to my last known good image.
Yep. And hopefully I can install the boot environment stuff on top of my existing running system and then migrate. That's when we do the next install. It's actually the next boot.
Sure.
One other question I also had was, does it make sense to run something like FreeNAS in, say, a cloud machine? I mean, could I run this in DigitalOcean and get any use out of that?
Sure, you could definitely run it in a VM, and we have seen people do that. Obviously, for performance reasons, you'll probably want to have it on bare metal just because ZFS will like to talk to the disk directly itself, and that's where it does all the proper checksumming and making sure that it notifies you and warns you if a disk starts to go bad and checksumming starts to fail. But really, there's nothing stopping you. If you wanted to load it up in a VM somewhere, yeah, sure, you could do that.
Oh, and I have a question also, I guess, from the chat room. Can I get rid of my Time Machine attached storage with this? Can I run a Mac against this and make it look like a Time Machine?
Yes, you can. We have lots of people do that. That's on the Mac, that's probably the most common thing we hear about is I'm doing Time Machine backups with it.
Awesome. Okay, like I said, we're almost out of time. Is there anything that we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of besides boot environments?
Well, you definitely covered a lot. I would encourage folks who are kind of looking at FreeNAS for the first time. We have an 11.0 release coming out in the next couple of weeks. We're going to try and get an RC1 of that out sometime this week. It's going to have a demo of what the new UI is going to look like going forward. We've rebased on Angular for our user interface, and we're starting to really get deep into this new development of this new UI, which looks pretty, pretty and I think is a lot slicker and will give us a good framework to move forward. So exciting times there. Looking for people to test the VM functionality and give us comments on jails as well, because we want to make sure those improve as well.
Good, and I hope you're basing it on the new Angular 3 or whatever, because that's just barely around the corner coming out.
And it's like Angular 4, I think, even. Whatever the newest. It's Angular 4,
It's a bit annoying that Google keeps breaking all the backward compatibility every time they come out with a new one, but you know, at least it's better than anything else that's out there, which is really nice. And the fact that Google's supporting it and a huge community internally to Google using that, that's kind of thing I'm interested in. We're coming at it from the Angular Dart angle, which is now a separate code base but tries to have some of the same philosophies in it. So sure. I'm learning to write Dart code that using the Angular framework, so that's going to be pretty cool. Okay, we actually have one last question from the chat room. iSCSI, does it support iSCSI?
Yes. Yes, of course. And we have lots of people using it as a backing for their VMware setups, for example, using iSCSI.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Gray580, for that question. Okay. Wait, we still got questions coming in. I told you, final questions, people. All right. How well does it run on used hardware, and how about mixed-size drive pools?
So, yeah, you can do a mixed-size drive pool. Again, depending on how you set it up, though, if you're doing mirrors, obviously it's going to use the smallest disk size. So keep that in mind. If you have a bunch of 3-terabyte disks, you probably don't want to pair it with a 500-gig disk and expect your mirrors to look all right. But that being said, if you have a mixed pool size, once you've set up, it's easy to replace disks in the pool. So say, for example, you created it and it's a little bit smaller than you wanted, then you got that new shiny 3-terabyte and you can yank out the smaller drive. You could easily do that. You offline the disk via the GUI, pop the new 3-terabyte in, it'll reassociate, resilver, and at that point you can expand the pool and take advantage of the new size.
Here's an interesting question, actually, now that I just thought of this. Since I have this Drobo, I have this 16 or 12-terabyte system set up at home. Can you read the Drobo file format? Because I know that's open published.
You know, that's actually one I don't know off the top of my head. I have not attempted it myself, and I haven't seen anyone talk about it in the community. Possible, I'd say maybe hit up our forums for that, see if anybody's attempted that in the past.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Cool, because otherwise I've got to have, you know, probably buy hardware, be simpler that way, and set it up again with my stupid ancient Mac laptop that I have there. Would have to be talking to both my Drobo and that and slowly do all the drive migration stuff, which is going to take forever. So it's bad enough. And when I just every time I have to read from my Drobo, it's just like forever. And I don't mean dissing Drobo. Drobo is a good product. It's good for what it does. But it now sounds like there might be some a little competition in the space with what you guys are doing. So appreciate that. Okay, cool. We are out of time now. Now I do have to let you go. It's been really great, Chris, having you on the show, talking about FreeNAS and giving us an update into where it is and where it's headed. I appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. Thank you guys so much for having me on today, and I wish you luck the rest of the show.
Thanks a lot. That was Chris Moore talking to us about FreeNAS, one of my favorite underlying topics being the FreeBSD. Simon, what'd you think?
It's all pretty cool stuff. I've got just sitting on the desk just there, I've got an HP server that I picked up for not very much money in a sale recently. And I'm wondering whether I should blow away the nasty copy of Windows it's got on there and put FreeNAS on it and try playing with it. I'd like to see a little bit more emphasis on staying up to date. I'm a little worried by the fact that things only get updated when we rev the whole system on there and that packages aren't being kept up to date automatically. I'm a little worried by the implication that I do have to become something of a hobbyist to keep my NAS running. But it seems to be very comprehensive and capable, and it looks a pretty good choice if I am willing to take on those hobbyist responsibilities of having this domestic appliance under my care. So I'd give it pretty good marks. I think it looks cool stuff.
Well, I'm guessing that there's probably something like every other Mac program that I have, which is, you know, I get a notification that says there's a new version available. Do you want to install it now? And I imagine that's probably what the UI does on this, and probably it just pops up a little notice as we now have a new rev for these packages or for the underlying OS or whatever. So I imagine there's that sort of notification happening manually. Yeah. But you want that to be automatic.
The only thing I'd say is that, you know, on my computers that I have on my desktop, the screen is up the whole time. I do have a NAS in my server room at the moment. I cannot remember the last time I logged into the GUI on it. I may not have logged into it this year. There's no reason why I would ever go and look at the GUI on my file server. And the fact that I have to go in and check it regularly for alerts is what makes me nervous about this as a solution for me in my domestic setting. If it was in an enterprise setting, or if I was a hobbyist that you know, I had that extra half hour a week that I didn't know how to fill, it would be a great solution. But I'm concerned about the fact that it doesn't keep itself up to date without me going and checking in on it.
Yeah, I understand. I can definitely understand the problem with that. So, cool. All right, well, let me move on because we're out of time. We're out of time. Time to keep moving. So next week, I will be at OSCON in Austin. Apparently, the temperature there is insanely hot. So it's more like surface of the sun, I think, now. So I'm not really looking forward to my hot days in Austin coming up next week. But I will be talking to the OpenHub people, which Discover, Track, and Compare Open Source. They have a big announcement they're going to be making. Apparently, we're scooping them because we're actually doing the show on Tuesday, and they weren't going to announce in the conference until like Wednesday or Thursday. So I'm actually going to bleed the actual thing they're announcing there. That'd be nice. Following that, we got an update on Kubernetes. So we had them on in August 2015. Of course, it's orchestration for Docker images and Docker containers. Faraday RF, digital radio networking using the 33 centimeter band, which should be pretty cool. So basically putting a digital overlay over amateur radio waves. You have to have the right kind of license for it. But once you have that kind of license, you can really do some really cool digital stuff. NPM, the Node.js package manager, is going to be coming on. Thank you, Simon, for getting us to have them on. That's going to be cool. Following that, Etsy Divertsy, which is to collect information about waste streams that you can go green with your organization. Etsy even provides the platforms for it, so you don't even have to install it locally. Just use their platform. Magento is a commerce platform similar to shopping carts on steroids, is like I think I was described best. Cockpit, following that immediately, is to administer your Linux system via the web. So we mentioned Webmin a couple times today. This is a different version of that, probably more cool and everything else. And here's the one I'm really excited about coming up. Brian Bellendorf, been in the open source community for decades now. I think he had something to do with the original Apache, I think way back in the ways. But he's working with Linux Foundation now, and he's going to be talking about Hyperledger, which is their blockchain tech. To do contract signing, Bitcoin equivalent financial transactions, a whole bunch of other stuff. So that should all be really, really good. That's coming up in about 6 or 7 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, somewhere there. If you'd find out everything that's going on the show, go to twit.tv/floss. That's the homepage for the show. If you have other suggestions, please have the project leader or community coordinator email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. My address is on there on the webpage. We only have one slot left in Q2, so I'm opening up Q3 pretty quick. Again, I'm also going to be talking to people at Red Hat Summit, so hopefully they'll be slotting in. I have to slots to slot them in. We're actually pretty full for a change. We've got about 8 or 9 weeks all in a row, which is all pretty good. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. It used to be Tuesdays. It's Tuesdays right now, but starting on June 28th, I can't read my own notes, we'll be moving to Wednesdays. Same bat time, same bat channel, but Wednesday instead of Tuesday. So Tuesday's Wednesday, as they said in Xanadu. Anyway, follow us on Floss Weekly, Google Plus, and at Floss Weekly on Twitter, or me as Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. That's my origin blog these days. And that's also tweeted over to Facebook and Twitter at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. Again, I'm at Red Hat Summit this week. If you see me around, say hi. If you see something, say me. Now I'm getting goofy. Next week, OSCON in unbearable Austin. And then Yapsi coming up in the D.C. area, I think, coming up in about 2 months. So hopefully I'll be tweeting enough so people know where I'm going to be around there. Just got invited to go to allthingsopen.org, which is in the Research Triangle, coming up, I guess, in October sometime. again, I'm going there as a representative of Floss Weekly and looking for more guests for the shows. And then Dragon Con coming up in September. That is just an indulgence conference where I get to meet a lot of really cool people who are used to doing things that are related to fantasy, science fiction. I'm on the EFF track. I'm giving a couple talks, including my Dart talk, which should be pretty cool. Why Dart should be your next programming language. I'm going to be speaking about that. That's all the plugs I want to do. Simon, anything you want to plug today?
Not a huge amount. You know, this OSCON next week is the first one in a decade that I've not been to. So I wish you every happiness there. I'm very hopeful it'll go back to Portland next year because it'll be a lot easier to attend if it's in Portland. But have a great time and try not to turn into crispy fried bacon while you're there, if you can possibly avoid it. I'm not going to any conferences in the near future. But I'd encourage you to visit my website at webmink.com, visit my company's website at meshedinsights.com. You'll find me on Twitter as Webmink. You'll find me on Google Plus as Simon Phipps. You'll find me in the Linux Voice section of Linux Magazine every month. I have a column in there, and I encourage you to take out a subscription and read that. And these days, I don't actually have an employer. So if you enjoy all of these things, do drop by my Patreon page and find all the things I do. That's patreon.com/webmink. And I think the next conference I'm going to is in the autumn, or as you American folks say, in the fall. So until then, I'm happily settled here in the gray gloom of the United Kingdom, which with our forthcoming fascist government over here. But that's another topic.
Yeah, let's not get too much of the politics of that. Well, Simon, thanks once again for coming on the show in a timely way, and glad you had a chance to be able to have this conversation go on. And I'm looking forward to, of course, always to the next time that you can co-host the show. I really appreciate that.
It's my pleasure. It's good to be back.
Indeed, indeed. I was about to say, that was Simon Phipps. No, no, that means we've come. I'm not getting rid of you. We've come to the end of the show, though, so we're getting rid of you, the audience. We'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.